On this episode, I have Ivan Lee. He is the CEO of Datasaur.ai. We're going to be talking a lot about LLMs, AI. Datasaur.ai is a very interesting space where it comes to how they're helping companies within the AI space, working on a lot of the labeling issues. Ivan's got a great background as a product person, so he'll provide us some insights in terms of productization of LLMs and where he sees this going in the future. Got a lot to cover. Ivan, thanks for taking the time to be on with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Awesome. All right, before we dive in, I didn't obviously tell everyone what the company specifically does, and I would not do as good a job as you, but let everyone know what you guys do to give some context to the conversation.
Sure thing. So I'll start off with perhaps my own background and then dive into the company details. So my own background is that I studied computer science at Stanford University, finished my undergrad, dropped out of master's, started my first company. It was in a very different space. It was mobile gaming. And I'd been a lifelong gamer. It was always my dream to build and design a game. We ended up doing that for a couple of years, building a profitable company and selling it to Yahoo. Once I landed at Yahoo, my manager assigned me to an AI product, and that changed the trajectory of my career. I spent the next 7 years building out AI solutions at a number of different companies, both startups and large companies. Most recently, I was over at Apple. And what I recognized through all of that is that AI is very powerful, but in order to make it work, you need a lot of labeled training data. You need to take examples of human language and show computers how to interpret it so that they can better understand our language and predict in future scenarios what we're trying to say. So an example is we work with a company that does doctor-patient conversations. You might need to label the symptoms, when they began, how severe they were, along with the diagnosis and ultimately the treatment. If you can do that for 1,000, 2,000 of these initial examples, you can start training the model to know how to transcribe and extract that data from future conversations, right? So we work with a variety of industries, taking raw, unstructured data, turning that into the training set that is required for the AI model itself.
Awesome. I think that's probably a great jumping off point in terms of the conversation. Obviously, you know, as you just mentioned, this training data, making sure that you have the right labeling in place, making sure that the company has a baseline. When you're looking at AI and the importance of data labeling and how companies are potentially needing to make some adjustments to get to a certain level and make sure the model can run effectively, what are you seeing? Because I think a lot of people are talking about AI. It's all the hype in the last year. But then when you talk to people about actually implementing, it's a whole different conversation. There's a massive gap from where we're at to where we'd like to be.
It's a matter of perspective, right? So, for example, ChatGPT is a phenomenal research showcase, and it turned out to go viral as a mainstream tool, right? But if you go back to how OpenAI was framing it and thinking about it at the time, they thought it would just be yet another research showcase, similar to what they had done with DALL-E. Even they did not expect it to go viral in the way that it did. So I think of something like ChatGPT as an excellent AI toy in a way, right? Everyone can play around with it. It turns out it is actually useful at certain things. But now we're talking to Fortune 500 companies, people who are trying to apply this in a business setting. And suddenly, there are all these stories about how OpenAI seems to stumble and make mistakes in kind of silly and funny ways. That's no longer funny in a business setting, right? Hallucinating the wrong price for something can have very drastic effects if you're working in a financial firm. Hallucinating something in that healthcare scenario can have very immediate and very detrimental effects. So it's a very powerful technology, right? But now we need to learn how to harness that technology and apply it to business use cases in a safe, controllable, reproducible setting. I think that's the challenge that everyone's going, that everyone's figuring out right now. I think a lot of companies in 2023 are setting up their strategies with LLMs and how they want to approach and utilize and harness this technology in the coming years.
Do you see, as companies are, you know, strategizing, I spoke to someone that was talking about their three-year vision, and a big component that was still trying to address the analytics. But the stakeholders want to talk about where AI fits in. And he's having a time to try to make sure he educates the stakeholders to understand what that journey is going to look like. It's not going to be as immediate if they want the results that they would like to see. When you're seeing companies out there looking to implement AI in some capacity, some form, is there a disconnect between what maybe ChatGPT has caused in terms of, you know, the consumer side versus what an enterprise really will be needing to do and kind of the effort required?
Yeah, I think disconnect is a good word. I think there's a lot of, people end up being uncertain or being given a lot of very ambitious visions and dreams for, and certainly the technology is headed there, right? But I think there's a lot of ambiguity as to what it can deliver today. So we've had the opportunity to work with a number of clients in customizing models for them. And the way we approach this process is we will sit down with them and work backwards from the business use case. Fundamentally, what do you want it to solve for, right? Forget about the magic and everything that it can do. Just, okay, you want to sit down and take this database of a million documents and make it referenceable and searchable in a way that's going to save your analysts a lot of time. Okay, let's start with that. What kind of queries would they need to be able to put into the system? What kind of answers do you expect? What level of granularity? Does tone matter? If it's a external facing system, then you need to have you have to think about the brand of your organization and the tone you want to respond to customers with. If it's internal, how comprehensive does the solution have to be? What level of hallucination is still acceptable, right? And so by working backwards from this, that's how you can get to a system that actually brings real benefit and value to the company. So we will work with them to set up, okay, here's 25, 50 prompts. By the end of it, we're going to have at least 88% accuracy. And if we can agree on that very objective and measurable metric ahead of time, then we can agree at the end of the project that this was successful for you and your company. But remember, that is very different from what ChatGPT sets out to do. ChatGPT is beautiful in its ability to answer everything under the sun. These very specific models don't need to be able to summarize the Top Gun or Barbie movie to you. That's not the point, right? It's very centered on these prompts and this business use case, and does it do a good job here? Doesn't matter if it fails elsewhere.
Yeah, I guess this narrow AI, I mean, it's a little bit different than what Hollywood sells us and the image of what ChatGPT can do. But within a company, I mean, that seems a lot easier to maybe get to a point where you do have a working product. If it's more narrow, it's very defined, you are able to label within that narrow, you know, area, make sure that your accuracy is high. I guess when you're working with companies to kind of determine how narrow, how wide the scope should be, what's some of the guidance that you provide? Because obviously narrow might be easier, but less useful, and there might be a happy medium there.
Yeah. So actually, it's the end of the year and everyone's giving their year-end predictions for what's going to happen, right? I think something I feel pretty strongly about is that we're not going to converge on one general model that is all-powerful. I'll just take a hypothetical, we'll just use Starbucks as an example, right? Starbucks is not going to use one LLM model internally for their whole organization. Their marketing department is going to harness their own. Their data analytics department is going to have their own. Their customer service will have their own. You will see a proliferation and a divergence of models that all handle narrow use cases. In fact, this is actually, you know, very state-of-the-art kind of like frontier thinking. People are using a technique called LLM distillation. you don't want to be using a ChatGPT size model to solve your problems. It would be similar to me taking a MacBook Pro and using it as a calculator. Can I do that? Yes. Is it way overkill? Absolutely, right? So instead of using a giant model that solves all of your department's problems, all of the business use cases, you can use something called LLM distillation to gather training data set, use that data set to train a more traditional streamlined mini NLP model. And that model is now going to be 10 times faster, 5 times cheaper, and better and more precise specifically at this problem without the risk of hallucinations, right? So as powerful as this whole thing was, you also don't want to overuse it for every use case under the sun.
Interesting. I guess that, you know, when you kind of are looking at that model sizing exercise and you're looking at the amount of training data somebody needs, How are you consulting? Obviously, DataSore.ai kind of fits within that world. When you're looking at that, what kind of guidance are you giving, you know, your customers in terms of this is the minimum amount of data we need for this size model? Or just, obviously, we're not talking about specifics, but more generalizations, because I think, you know, obviously, when we think about ChatGPT, everyone thinks about enormous data volumes, enormous amounts of processing power. We're talking a little bit more narrow scope. And I'm just kind of curious what that means as you kind of narrow that down. How much data do you really need to actually be able to train a model and get to that, you know, kind of accuracy you mentioned?
Yeah. So unfortunately, there is no straightforward formula for that right now. You can imagine customer use case requiring a very different amount of data from something like healthcare, right? Let me clarify, because there's a big difference between the internet-sized data scale that ChatGPT was trained on versus this fine-tuning, this customization that you take once you have that foundation model. So there are only a handful of companies that can afford to build these foundation models, right? And those have, you know, multiplied this year. But I think we're going to start seeing maybe 5, maybe 10 models really dominate the scene in the coming year. And everyone will leverage the same foundation models. So you don't have to create your own foundation model. But once you have that, now, how do you kind of cater that towards your specific use case? On that front, we've seen everything from as few as like a handful of examples, like a dozen, through to a few thousand, right? It really depends on how sparse and diverse your use cases are, how much of this type of data was included in the original training data for the foundation model. So that part depends. And we consult client by client to advise, if we want to achieve this, we think it's going to take a couple of months. We're going to need this much training data approximately. And then we iterate from there.
Is it a case of legacy companies who sit on large amounts of data might have the curve is going to be steeper because they have a lot of data. But is their opportunity also potentially greater than obviously, you know, competitors that are smaller or startups that might not have the volume of data, but obviously they might just be more agile?
Yeah, that I think is the billion-dollar question of the coming years, right? Every VC is thinking about this. Do you bet on the legacy giant that's in the space that has a bunch of data and has those sales relationships and everything else to work off of? Or do you bet on the upstart that is new to the field, but everything is LLM first, right? And I think the answer to that differs from field to field, from industry to industry. There will be some where all you really need to do is take ChatGPT, plop it on top of all of your existing data, and that's your enterprise solution. And no startup could ever compete with the massive amount of historical knowledge you bring to the table. But there will be others that are thinking in an LLM first way. And that's what I'm really excited for. And that's what I'm really looking forward to, is what kind of innovative new products can we see out there that is not just existing product with LLM search slapped on top of it.
That's interesting, because I think LLM first, you know, we've seen that term mobile first, you know, we've seen this term come up, and LLM first, obviously. you know, you've, I guess, you know, earlier you mentioned productizing LLMs before we started recording, and as we've been talking, and you know, you mentioned one LLM might not be the all-encompassing winner. There might be multiples. Is there opportunities as you're looking at the productization of LLMs for companies to get really narrow? I guess like when you have health insurance, you know, health insurance, you have these fundamental in the supply chain as a whole. If you could apply a very niche learning to specific, you know, data set, do you envision LLMs being that detailed in terms of like the future of, you know, productizing an LLM?
Let me try answering this with a little bit of a longer story. Let's kind of look, take a lesson from history and see how it applies here. So I am just old enough to remember the days when spell check was not built into every piece of software in the world. Once upon a time, you had to go to an electronics store, buy a spell check program on a floppy disk, go home, install it on your computer, and now you have a spell check program that was separate from your word processing. Once you were done with word processing, you know, your email, your homework assignment, whatever, you have to copy and paste into spell check, get the corrected answer, copy and paste it back into your word processing. That sounds silly and archaic, but does that sound familiar? That is exactly what people are doing with ChatGPT today, right? You copy and paste into the ChatGPT web browser, get it to correct your language or whatever, put it back into your email. That is such an interesting parallel. Because what we saw what happened afterwards, right? At some point, Microsoft incorporated it into their Office. And then a web browser incorporated it into every text field on the internet. And nowadays, if you use a text field and it doesn't spell check for you, you're like, what is going on here? It feels uncanny, right? It's like the developer forgot to implement the feature. So there was a, funny enough, Steven Sinofsky, an Office veteran from Microsoft, has predicted that every text box in the future is going to be LLM run, right? So in terms of product innovations I'm looking forward to, what happens when you take something that, you know, in the old way of thinking, oh, that's unscalable. I would need an army of 1,000 people looking through like 1,000,000 documents to make something like this happen. What happens when you can do that in a matter of hours or even minutes, right? There's this cool new research about all these proteins being discovered by, I think it's Google DeepMind. And it's just like bypassing thousands of hours of work, years of research, and just suggesting proteins that are actually viable that we can actually use. And it's advancing the medical industry by, you know, tenfold. What is the equivalent of that for all the industries that we don't usually commonly talk about, right? What does it mean for civil engineering? What does it mean for manufacturing? I spoke with a startup that is a chip fabricator, and they've been going at this for like 10 years. They're a startup competing with NVIDIA and the like. And they were at an LLM conference. I'm like, what do you use LLMs for? They're like, we actually can describe, you can describe a microchip using a text description. And we just have the LLM suggest the next generation of chips. That's insane. Right? That blew my mind. I wouldn't have believed it if this wasn't like a material science PhD standing in front of me telling me it actually works. So that's what I mean by LLM first, right? That's what I think the next generation of products looks like when you just take these things that seemed, that would have been irrational in the past, but now are fully enabled by this amazing new technology.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think as I'm listening to you and I'm trying to take, you know, away my thoughts on this, it's almost as though getting the different permutations of what the possible is, in the case of this chip manufacturer, if they can actually then take the next step and actually somehow take all these variations of chips and actually then test them without making them, I mean, then all of a sudden we have a company that could then rival kind of what we talked about, the legacy companies, and potentially challenge without having all that data, because the speed of innovation. I guess as you're kind of looking at it and you're like, well, companies are going to productize this data, there's one component of their LLM first and the company is leveraging that product. The other is you're going to have LLMs being adopted and used. Obviously, a lot of the software industry has been built around per seat concepts, per license fees. And all of a sudden we have LLMs that might come in reduce costs, reduce seats might not exactly fit with that old model. Like, are you anticipating or kind of thinking of these, you know, these concepts being challenged as LLMs become adopted more mainstream?
Yeah, 100%. I think business models will have to evolve and change. I think this conversation is a little bit of a roller coaster between LLMs are highly constrained, beware, versus like they're amazing and they're the next generation. Here's another constraint, right? Like, we've operated for the last 20 years in Silicon Valley under the assumption that all software has zero marginal cost. Once you've created it, it becomes free to distribute. That is not true with LLMs, and companies are learning this the hard way. They're racking up their OpenAI bills, right? Their Azure bills. And so there are certain use cases where you would think LLMs are a perfect fit. For example, I spoke with somebody at a leading video platform, streaming platform, right? I'm like, how are you using LLMs? They're like, well, actually, we haven't found a good use for them yet. I'm like, that's odd. Wouldn't, at a very minimal use case, I assume you could use it to like screen for inappropriate comments and behavior and just like use that as a moderation technique. They're like, no, we've invested 10 years into proper moderation algorithms. If I use ChatGPT, it could do the job, but we'd also be bankrupt by the end of the year, because we have hundreds of millions of comments on an annual basis, right? So something like that I thought was like a very natural fit for LLMs, it's cost prohibitive. So you do have to be careful. This is not a free software, and the business models will change and evolve to reflect that.
Yeah, it seems that it actually, you know, depending on what we're looking at the use case and, you know, we're looking at adoption, we have companies trying to, I asked this question three and a half years ago when I first started the podcast. I had a lot of AI CEOs on. My question at the end of all of them was, how do you help companies understand ROI? Because I was trying to get my mind around kind of, you know, we are running projects. We really don't know exactly what to expect. We don't know the cost. These are pilots, but I need to make decisions to go if I'm going to keep going. When you're looking at the companies that have come to you guys, hey, help us with this model, help us with training data, are you seeing people even look at ROI, or is it at this point it's like, hey, let's just do a pilot, and if it works and it's valuable, then we'll sit down and take a look at that?
To be honest, a lot of 2023, I think, was around pilots and kind of exploratory. I believe that 2024 will be more about execution of those strategies. And we will start, and as people start requesting serious budgets, it will be more about ROI, right? There are, you know, the usual crossing the chasm curve. There are early adopters. Some people are spending tens of millions of dollars on this already. But the vast majority don't have a budget like that to play around with. They are given POC budgets. They're given pilot project budgets. Figure out what our strategy is, and then we'll commit to it maybe next year. So a lot of our consulting has focused on helping people identify and clarify their ROI, right? This has been an age-old problem in the world of AI. You know, I've delivered models, and then we'll present it to an executive, and they'll just type something out, and they're like, oh, this use case doesn't work. We've had a lot of quantitative metrics that said, hey, if we get to 82% accuracy, 94% accuracy, we'll deliver it. But the executive is like, well, this one query I tried anecdotally doesn't work. Go back to the drawing board, right? So learning from that, I think it's really important to have that aligned understanding from the beginning. We're going to take these 50 prompts. We're going to make sure that we get 88% accuracy on that. If we're done with that, we'll sign off on this phase of the project. We'll move on to the next phase. I think that's a lesson I learned from traditional AI, but is as relevant in the LLM world as ever.
I guess, you know, it's making me think about a couple of things you've touched on. One, it's pilots. Future productizing LLMs is going to look very different. Adoption at the enterprise level, which obviously everyone, you know, consumer enterprise adoption, and everyone wants that. OpenAI, ChatGPT's done a great job. But at the enterprise level, when you're starting to look at adoption and you're going to look at that cost side, you just had that example of the you know, comment moderation, the costs that are going to be involved. And I think as you mentioned, productizing future LLMs, these business models, especially for competitors, are they going to take advantage of their potential niche knowledge, their potential niche LLMs can, and kind of bring a solution that's going to have that double edge of, hey, not only do we save you money, but we don't cost as much. Because, you know, if we're going to leave it to just the big giants to produce technology for us, we've seen where that takes us and kind of what the implications are.
Yeah, certainly. And I think even from a pragmatic standpoint, there's only so much that the big giants can do, right? Each giant with all of their resources can target, what, 3 to 5 major industries. There's still so many out there that won't be able to get the attention of those giants, right? Part of our mission, from actually our mission statement, is to democratize access to NLP, natural language processing, which means Datasor is working with companies and organizations around the world. Just last month, we announced a really exciting initiative to work with the Southeast Asian region. We're part of a coalition of companies that is developing the region's first foundation model, right? And it's going to be trained on local data with languages fairly represented from the region, because they don't want the fate of their country's, you know, technology in the hands of Meta and Google and Amazon. They want to develop their own foundation model. So being able to democratize, it's beyond just industry, but also to all the global citizens of the world, and making sure that everyone has equal access to this.
I guess what you're seeing and what the company does, obviously you can put it probably a lot more eloquently than I can, but when I kind of think about what you guys are doing, I'm looking at it going, you guys are very much, I don't want to use the term picks and shovels, but you're very fundamental towards potentially helping companies get up to speed, get to a point where so they could take advantage of leveraging LLMs. As you're seeing some of the use cases and in this last year, the adoption, do you get a lot of questions around, hey, I'm curious, or are you getting a lot more questions of, hey, let's actually launch something and get it done because we're just in a hurry?
Truth be told, I would say a lot of conversations have been a lot more about curiosity and exploration, but that's fine. I think that's the right approach.
Got to start there.
Yeah. And this technology, you know, there's that famous quote about, like, any technology sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic. It, you know, I've been in the NLP space for 5 years, even with Datasor alone. The leading experts in this space didn't expect something like this to occur this rapidly, right? People thought this was at least 10 years out. So it does feel magical because we got 10 years of technology advancement in the span of 12 months. So everyone is in an exploratory phase, feeling it out. But I think next year, we will actually start seeing what the, you know, how to productize this, right? For lack of a better term, how to actually make this useful and have a real measurable impact on businesses.
Last question. I'm just curious. We've seen, I think it was maybe 8-9 years ago, we saw self-driving cars and the concept. Everyone was, you know, talking about how that's going to be right around the corner, right? The last 3-4 years, it was cryptocurrency, trying to find a use case for crypto. I think blockchain obviously has its particular use cases, but crypto, people trying to search for a solution. Amazing technology. Adoption has been very different than what people might be looking at. When you're looking at AI, what is going to be different? Because obviously there's been AI winters. There's been a lot of talk about AI for a long time. It's not new. It's been around for, this conversation's been around for a while. Is ChatGPT, you mentioned the advancement of 10 years and 12 months. Is that the difference now for AI, where it's, you know, we've released, you know, opened a Pandora's box and now people are going to make use of this?
So this might be a little bit more of a controversial take, but this is based on my own, you know, lived life experiences, right? I entered the industry at just like 2 years after the App Store was announced, 3-4 years after the smartphone was first released, right? So I got to take part of the mobile revolution, and I saw how transformative that was. I've been waiting the rest of my career for the next advancement of that level. There was VR for a little bit. There's the ones that you mentioned. There's computer vision, blockchain. I never really saw what those were able to do. But when I started Datasore in 2019, everybody was still hyped about computer vision, but I wanted to place a bet on NLP because I developed NLP. It felt really powerful. Language is at the core. It's the foundation for us as a society, right? It's how we communicate, whether in writing or through language like now. So I think I thought NLP was going to be really powerful. Even I didn't see LLMs coming, but I think the meteoric rise of ChatGPT, fastest growing consumer app of all time, fastest to ever reach a billion users, people see there's a fundamental difference here in just how immediately useful it can be. That's the key, right? This is not just, and I'm, to be clear, I think there is a certain level of overhyping of this technology. And that's where I've been trying to share a lot of the constraints and the reasons you can't use it everywhere. But despite all of the overhyping that is happening, people are fundamentally using things like ChatGPT in their day-to-day lives. And that means real value has been generated here.
Absolutely. I love it, man. You know a lot about this. I keep asking you questions. You got to go run a business. So I appreciate your time. Thanks for being on. Listen, if somebody wants to reach out to you, because we covered a lot of stuff. We did not get as deep as I might have hoped. Maybe we'll have you back for another episode down the road. But if somebody does want to reach out to you, talk to you about either datasore.ai or, you know, something you mentioned on the podcast, what is a good way of getting a hold of you?
Yeah, a couple of ways. So you can just reach out directly to my email, ivan@datasore.ai. Feel free to shoot an email, just mention this podcast in the subject line. And then the other way is through LinkedIn. Ivan Lee, I think the actual tag is just IY Lee. So come find me.
All right, man. Awesome. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Cool. Thank you. Take care.
All right. That's it for the episode. Be back again. Different guests, different topic. Until then, one, share this episode. It's been awesome. I know we covered a lot of different things. Ivan's got a great background in this. I hope you guys find value. So share with somebody else who's going to be interested in what we've been talking about. Like, subscribe, leave a comment, leave me a review. Let me know how we're doing. I appreciate it if you do. Until next time, thank you and goodbye.